I'm a goofy person, but I think making people laugh is always a great thing.
In a world where only the strong survive, there comes a time when the only way to settle the score is a one-on-one battle to the finish. Two entrepreneurs enter, but only one of them leaves. It's the Entrepreneur Showdown with Joe Cassandra and Dan Franks. Now, on to the showdown.
I am Dan Franks, and it's Thursday morning, and that means it's time for one more special edition of the Entrepreneur Showdown podcast on Thursdays, which means we are only 1 week away from Entrepreneur Showdown Presents, our brand new presentation, where every month Joe and I will pick a theme for the month, and then every Thursday we will be interviewing an entrepreneur from that niche, one that maybe you haven't heard of, but they're going to be super entertaining, super insightful, and we're very excited to bring you an all-new format every Thursday starting next week. But don't despair, because every Monday we'll still be bringing you Entrepreneur Showdown as you've come to know it and love it. Three hard-hitting rounds where Joe and I don't pull any punches, and neither do our guests. And that leads us into today's episode of the Entrepreneur Showdown podcast. In round one, Joe and I discuss how to be interesting. It's a fine art, and there are certain things you can do to make yourself more interesting and more attractive to others around you, and it'll help you and your business. That's in round one. In round two, Joe and I show off our lack of knowledge on certain topics from time to time, and today is going to be no different because we introduce ourselves to e-commerce stores. And then in round three, we bring on an e-commerce expert. Billy Murphy from Forever Jobless joins us, and he sets Joe and I straight on what exactly e-commerce stores are, what that means to him, what that's meant to his personal life as far as money goes, because he's really done well for himself. So we'll talk about all those things and more with Billy. Don't forget, for the show notes of today's episode and a whole lot more, head on over to EntrepreneurShowdown.com. And without wasting any more time, let's get on to the showdown.
Round one.
Right here on round one, what Joe and I want to look at is something that might be difficult to a lot of people. And to be quite honest, I think it's difficult to everybody until you're really experienced and you really made a name for yourself or really developed a persona to surround yourself with. And this is the art of being interesting, how to make yourself interesting to those around you. And I think this is an interesting topic to discuss because a lot of people don't give me that cheesy laugh. A lot of people produce a lot of great content, but because people don't find them interesting, their content is never recognized fully for what it is. Do you agree or disagree?
Well, I think a lot of people, they take themselves really seriously with what they're doing, and that's fine. Like, they take their work very seriously. But then they don't think about that little part of, hey, I need to keep them interested. Because everyone's not always going to read thousands of words just because you think it is great content. Because maybe it is great content. But if it's not in any way entertaining or doesn't tell a story or grab you in any way, then it doesn't matter if it's the next Harry Potter. It's gonna fall on deaf ears, because especially nowadays, a lot of people, their attention span is very short, and a lot of blogging tips nowadays say, okay, you got to grab them in the very first sentence or whatever. But the truth is, a lot of people don't even read the first sentence. You got to find how to stick out right away. Not even in the first sentence, but like a header or something like that. Make that header as interesting as possible to suck people in.
Yeah, there's all kinds of ways to be interesting, and we'll talk a couple of ways of how to make your blog interesting, but this can apply to anything, just your podcast or just your persona when you enter a room. There's lots of things you can do to draw people's attention to yourself. And like you said, you can have the greatest content in the world, but if it's not something that grabs someone's attention and makes them want to continue reading, like a calculus book, no one thinks a calculus book is interesting. It just has very factual, good information. But if people have a choice, they're not going to read this calculus book. That's something that they're reading because they're required to or because they have to for their profession. But in our space, we're not trying to create content that people are required to read. people have a choice to read our stuff or not read our stuff, so we have to do some things to be interesting. And do you want to kick off some of these reasons or some of these ways that you have to be interesting?
Well, there's a lot of them, so we're not going to go through all of them. But one that I think is important is just, I'm a goofy person, but I think making people laugh is always a great thing. It's a little harder in the written word unless you're really good with words. That's why, I guess, podcasting, if you're trying to be funny, it's a little easier to come off that way because you can hear inflections and everything like that. So for bloggers, I'm not sure how you're going to do that. But I think because everyone likes to laugh no matter what type of person you are, and when you have that type of humor coming out, and we banter and we have some good jokes here and there, and I think that keeps people intrigued because our shows are a little bit longer, so we have to put that in there. If we were just like blabbering, being very serious the whole time, I don't think we'd keep people beyond 10 minutes. So I think we have that as something, and I think a lot of people should put that in as well.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people in blogs or podcasts or even in the real world are afraid to be themselves, and a lot of people are very funny in their own ways. Some people have a dry sense of humor, some people just have a real goofy sense of humor, but I think everybody has, well, I don't want to say everybody, I've met some pretty dull people, but most people have something that's funny or unique about them that people enjoy being around. It's just a matter of people are willing to open up to others and give that feeling off. And I was actually in a meeting today, and I was talking to a group of people, and everyone, I could just tell their eyes were just glazed over. And all I did, I just said something that was myself. I wasn't trying to crack a joke, but I kind of tickled myself and I started laughing. And then everyone in the room started laughing. And from that point on, the rest of the meeting was completely different. After everyone just kind of loosened up and became themselves and allowed themselves to be a little vulnerable to this serious atmosphere, it made a world of difference. So yeah, I think laughing is super important. Something else that I think is important, and you and I, we exercise this on a weekly basis on this episode, is to be wrong. And not necessarily to just be flat out wrong, but don't try so hard to have to be right. Because unless your thing, unless what makes you interesting is that you're the smartest person ever, or you are the 100% best expert in a certain topic, you're not going to, being right and trying to just be 100% accurate with everything, I think is kind of doing yourself a disservice. Because like I said, unless you're that person that's the 100% expert, you're not going to get everything right. So trying to do that is just going to draw back. But if you're wrong and you, again, show that vulnerability about yourself and maybe question yourself or not claim to know everything, but maybe present questions just to the audience or present questions to those around you and not claim to be the know-it-all, I think that helps a lot too.
Well, that's one of the things that I guess defines our personality, is that we're fine being wrong or being on different sides of a problem or a topic. Because, I mean, if we're both on different sides of a topic, then one of us probably is wrong, but we're fine giving that opinion or those ideas because we know that even maybe it is wrong where we're arguing, it may help whoever's listening. It may give them an idea of, or maybe help them think in a different way. And just going on with like our personality type thing, that was the one I was going to mention that I didn't really see on here. I didn't stick out if it is buried in here, is if you have a personality that's different than a lot of other people, like, and I'm not trying to toot our horn, but just so it's an example, we have a different format. We have a different way that we run the show. And that automatically gives off a different personality of a show, not even of ourselves, but of a show. It automatically makes us stand out some, where we've had people already ask, bigger people ask to come on our show, even though we're still starting up and we haven't made any money from this or anything. But our personality automatically made us stand out and become more interesting. And that's just something that either if you're writing or you're speaking, you have to find that differentiating factor and find how your personality is different, because you'll, a lot of the people that are that do stand out, the Derek Halperns, Ramit, Pat Flynn, they all have a distinct personality that when you think of maybe even just one word, or you think of something in that business arena or online arena, you think of them right away. And so it's kind of a branding thing, kind of a personality differentiator. So I think finding that makes you a lot more interesting.
Yeah, and that leads very well into my last tip of how to be interesting. And that's just to be honest. Like we've said, if you're yourself, if you don't try to put on some kind of facade, whether it's to try to be more open and more outgoing, or whether it's to try to be a little more reserved to try to get a different crowd, if it's not you, then you're not going to be able to maintain it. And if you are able to maintain this fake personality, you're not going to be happy doing it. So if you're honest with yourself, honest with the readers, and you just let your true self show through, sure, maybe you won't get everybody's attention, like you or I. I don't think there's going to be just a ton of experts listening to our podcast because, hey, maybe they'll listen to us and think these guys don't know as much as me, so I don't want to hear it. But that's okay, because then that's not the audience we're going for. We just are being ourselves. We're being honest with who we are. We're not trying to act like we know things we don't. But when we do have an opinion on something, we come out and say it. And I think a lot of people like that, and a lot of people listen to us because of that, pretty much just like you said. So we're going to actually link to the article that inspired this talk, and it's from Copyblogger, and it's a few years old, but it's a pretty epic article, which a lot of them on Copyblogger are. So we'll definitely link that in the show notes on entrepreneurshowdown.com. But with that, let's get on to round two.
Round two.
Today in round two, Joe and I are going to be talking about something that neither he nor I are super familiar with, and that's one of the reasons we wanted to do this to lead into our special guest today in the main event, and that's the topic of e-commerce stores, and we're going to dig in with our guest Billy Murphy today, who specializes in building and buying and selling e-commerce stores, just exactly what type of e-commerce stores he does. And then something else we're going to talk with Billy about is how he picks his niches. And we think that'll be super valuable for us and for you guys, because this is one of the things that people struggle with no matter what line of work you're in, whether it is e-commerce stores or whether it's just building affiliate sites. And that's to pick out what specific niche or what specific category or subject your website's going to be targeting. And Billy has really, through his e-commerce stores, found a way to pick out these profitable niches, you know, seemingly out of thin air. He does it many, many times over. So he has this method that he uses for these niches to actually find him, he says. So we're going to dig into him about that. But Joe, to me, like I said, I'm kind of a e-commerce idiot, I would say, because when I read some of Billy's blog posts, he doesn't post a ton, but when he does, it's very valuable information, and not all of it has to do with these e-commerce stores. But when it does, I kind of glance over this idea of e-commerce stores and keep reading, because what he talks about can be applied to anything I'm doing. But now that we're talking to him, it's kind of we want to dig deep into what this e-commerce store idea is.
Yeah, I mean, like you mentioned, we're not too well informed in this area, and we'll probably just ask him straight up, like, what the hell is an e-commerce store?
Yeah.
But like, his site is just working around that. Hey, he's just someone that can't have a job. He has to build his own thing. And just when we were researching his background, he started Blue Fire Poker, which is something different than like what he's doing now. He's doing, I guess, like a membership type community. But it's in that type of niche. Like, I guess the teaching how to do e-commerce stuff, but with Blue Fire it was kind of like the same thing, except it was just all about how to teach you how to play poker. So he's doing all these membership sites, and maybe he's found something that, hey, maybe this is the ticket if you want to, maybe this is like an easier way, I guess, than starting like a huge company. I guess maybe he's thinking maybe these membership sites are where the money's at. And that's why we'll get his take on that with his new business, Ecom Lab. And so that'll be an interesting topic to talk about, is like memberships sites the way to go. And then, like you said, we've talked about it before, where do you get these ideas and how do you test them? I know in the post that we'll look at, he had a lot of people that just emailed him questions like, how do you start one? How do you get traffic and all that? So maybe he was already validated with that. But if he's had other ventures that failed, we'll want to hear about that and maybe some testing methods he used for that, because everyone doesn't have a platform to start off with people asking them questions. And so I'm sure he'll have advice on that. So yeah, we'll probably be starting at the ground level at first, just to like get an idea of what e-commerce stores are.
Yeah, because it's a pretty generic thing, you know, e-commerce stores. You know, you and I, when we first started talking about it, had a pretty different views of it. I mean, when you don't have any background knowledge of something, you just have no experience, I think it is good to start at the ground floor, just to make sure everyone's on the same page. And Billy is a perfect person to bring on for that because he was in the exact same position. He went to school. He graduated college. He had, as he called it, a boiler room type job from that movie, if you've ever seen it. So I can totally picture what he was doing. And with no knowledge of this e-commerce space, he was able to break into it. And within 9 months, he was making over $40,000 a month, which is unreal.
So
that's, you know, 15 to 20 stores he had going at any given time. So he obviously was able to go from, as I like to say, zero to hero in this space. And I know there's a lot of other people that are wanting to go from zero to hero on their own, being jobless like Billy says he is. So if this is another niche or another way to be able to do that, we definitely want to present it and want to learn more about it ourselves because it's rather appealing.
Yeah, I mean, even if you – I Googled what is an e-commerce store, and even, like, the definitions there, I still didn't get a full understanding of what it is. If it's you're just selling a bunch of products, like – or is it, like, a Shopify-type thing? I have no idea. So we'll definitely have to ask him about that, but he's had – tons of experience in different ventures. He's been interviewed on Mixergy, so I mean he's definitely a good guy that we're going to get to talk to, and especially about something that's a little different than what we've talked about in other interviews. So it'll be a fresh take on like a new way to do business.
Yeah, so we're super excited to learn about this along with you guys and bring Billy on. So we're not going to waste any more time. Let's go to the main event.
It's time for the main event.
Our guest in today's main event, like me, from the great state of Texas, and has taken an interesting path to get to where he is today, which I'm sure we'll dig more into. Our guest today is Billy Murphy. Billy has launched several very successful online businesses and is a former professional poker player. A few years ago, he found a niche with the opportunity, and that is starting and running e-commerce stores. In fact, in 9 months, he grew his e-commerce business to the point of making $40,000 a month and continues to excel in the space. Billy also blogs at foreverjobless.com and has recently launched a new program to teach others how to run an e-commerce business just like him at ecomlab.com. So without further delay, Billy, what's going on?
What's going on, guys? Thanks for having me on.
Hey, yeah, thanks for joining us. So I guess I said foreverjobless.com. Are there any other overview background-based podcasts that you would send anyone to listen to if they want to learn more about your background story?
I guess there's a bunch of them that I've done interviews for, but there's not like a go-to about me video page or anything like that up. I need to do one, but I haven't done one yet.
Okay. Do you have any favorite podcasts? I know you're on Entrepreneur on Fire, and I think Joe mentioned you were on Mixergy a while back as well.
Yep, done Mixergy, done Jamie's on Venture Millionaire. Those are probably a couple good ones.
Okay, we'll definitely link up to those so people can hear more about your background. But Joe and I really want to just get down to the nitty gritty. And we discussed in round two how kind of stupid we are in terms of what you do. So could you just give us a starting point, what you do? What is an e-commerce store?
Sure. I'll give you kind of a quick background on how I got into it and just kind of how I learned it. I basically was looking for a new opportunity. And I had a buddy who was doing e-commerce stores, did really well. And he said, hey, just give e-commerce stores a shot. It's, you know, pretty easy. You can do it in part time and just, you know, it scales up pretty easily. So, you know, I listened to him. He'd been doing it for 3 or 4 years, doing really well. And I ended up starting a store and buying a store on Flipa the same week. And, you know, I really had no idea. I had no background in e-commerce at all. And just kind of, you know, learned on the fly. And so, the store I bought off Flipa had sales coming in. So, you know, I figured I had no idea what was going to happen when I bought, the site. I didn't know if, you know, sales were going to stop coming in. No idea, but then sales kept coming in after I bought the site. And so I said, okay, this business clearly works. When I first bought the site, I bought it at a really low multiple. I bought a site that was making $900 a month for about $4,000. And so, you know, I thought something was off. But it turns out there's just not a lot of people who know about e-commerce stores, and it's, you know, affiliate marketing and AdSense sites and stuff like that tend to be, you know, more about what people talk about and teach about. E-commerce stores is kind of just doesn't get the attention for some reason, probably because people think there's high barriers to entry, but there's really not. So, you know, kept running that store, started doing, you know, marketing for the store. I started from scratch and slowly, I mean, it takes a little while to get sales, but slowly sales started coming in, you know, a couple sales a month, a couple sales a week, and then got to the point where I was doing a couple sales a day. and just scaled it up. And so, yeah, I mean, e-commerce stores in general, for people who, you know, don't know the difference what an e-commerce store is, essentially it's just selling physical products. Obviously, you can sell digital products as well, but, you know, a lot of people are looking for something online specifically. So maybe you're looking for a heater or a mattress or whatever it may be. You're gonna go search in Google, and you know, a list of stores are gonna come up. And so you know, basically with e-commerce stores, all I did was drop shipping stores. So all I'm doing is listing a product for sale that people are looking for already, and the supplier needs people to sell it. And so you act as just a middleman between the supplier and the end customer. And so, you know, you market that product and make sales. It's very similar to affiliate marketing in the sense that, you know, you're selling someone else's product. But the difference is, you can kind of build a brand around it. So you can build a brand around, you know, whatever it may be, a heater store. And you can build a big heater brand and sell a lot of different brands, whatever the store may be. But it seems to be a relatively untapped market online.
So if it's because it does sound similar to affiliate marketing. But of like you said, you're mainly in the physical product space. I guess to me, when you said multiple products, that sounds similar to someone who's running like an Amazon affiliate store, but obviously your margins must be higher. What are your typical margins on whatever these widgets are that you're selling?
Exactly. And I always see a lot of stores like for sale or affiliate sites for sale, and they're essentially a store, but they just work as an affiliate to Amazon. From what I understand, I've never run an Amazon store, but affiliate store, but I think their margins are around, like, is it 4%?
Yeah, I think 4%, and then if you get enough quantity, then it goes up to 7%.
Right. And so with e-commerce stores, generally the margins I was seeing was between 20 and 30, and that's because, you know, I was drop shipping. And so, you know, they'd be higher if I was making my own products. But basically, you know, a lot of people don't know that they could take an Amazon store, someone that's already getting all that traffic, and you know, it takes some effort, but turn that store into a store where they're actually sourcing the deals with the suppliers, and they can, you know, probably quintuple the sales or the profits on that site with some work. Obviously, it's not as easy as just clicking a button, but, you know, a bunch of calls to the supplier, filling out some paperwork, that type of stuff. I mean, there's a lot of opportunity where they would make more money if they had their own store.
Okay, so tell me this, and this sounds similar, this whole drop shipping thing. Years ago, I think I was probably in middle school, somehow I talked my mom into buying me a product off an infomercial, and it was like a booklet of drop shippers and teaching you how to, I guess this was before e-commerce stores were really popular, but like do this through ads in the newspaper or then later on, you know, through eBay selling knives. I think knives were like super common to do this with. Right. Is there anything different now than there was years ago selling these drop ship products?
Well, I'm sure there's more people in it. Than there were years ago, but it's still relatively untapped. And I mean, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of people have services where, hey, we have, you know, thousands of dropshippers to pick from. A lot of people think you have to pay a lot of money for services to, you know, find suppliers. But really it's as simple as like most of my, the suppliers that I found, I just found an niche I wanted to be in, and I would find other stores in that space, and I would just see what products they were offering. And I would go contact those manufacturers and say, hey, I'd also like to sell your stuff. And most of them will just, you know, send you an order form, a supplier form, and just fill it out, get it back to them. And most of the time you're in business pretty quick.
So is it like Amazon, you just sign up through like their website, but this, you have to actually go to each supplier and say, hey, I want to be, a commerce for a seller for your product. Is that the difference?
Yeah, exactly. So if you were to do it, well, on Amazon, you're essentially just referring, you know, products that are already on Amazon and taking a small cut. With this, you're essentially doing a little bit extra legwork, but the little bit extra legwork gets you paid, you know, 4x higher multiple. So you'd go to each supplier, really just call them or email them and say, hey, I want to sell your products. They send you the forms, you fill it out, and it just shows them that you're legitimate, you know, that you're planning on operating a legitimate business. You give them your EIN number, send it back to them, and a lot of times they'll just send you their whole inventory list, their pricing list, and so that you'll know, you know, what you're making on each sale, and you'll know, you know, they give you all the product pictures and descriptions so you can put them on your site.
So you have to actually, you already have to have a business set up if you have an EIN to give to them. You already have to set up a business before you even, I guess, go out to try and set up a store. Is that right?
Yeah, I think most of them require that. Yeah.
So I want to take a kind of a zoom out here and talk about you and your business practices, just because you're so successful, and I know a lot of things that successful business people do work across a wide variety of niches and spaces in business. And one of the things you've talked about multiple times on your blog is that you find your businesses pick you as opposed to you picking your business. Could you kind of explain that concept and let us know how you implement that strategy?
Sure. Yeah, a couple times that's happened. I mean, specifically recently for Ecom Lab, you know, I had been debating starting an e-commerce training site for a while, just because, you know, when I was in e-commerce or when I was just getting started into it, it was pretty difficult. And I had a friend that I could call and just, you know, ask him all my questions. But, you know, I realized other people don't have a friend that, you know, dominates e-commerce that they can just call up and say, hey, how do I do all these things? So, you know, I knew there was a need in the market for people to kind of get handheld a little bit and just walk through the steps. But I put a blog post up last year and literally got like 100 emails on people saying, hey, how do I do this? How do I do this? How do I do this? And it was all, you know, based on all the same questions. How do I get suppliers? How do I get, you know, traffic to the store? How do I, you know, pick a niche, that type of stuff. And so, you know, it wasn't, you know, I think a lot of people launch businesses based on the fact that they say, okay, I really want to make money, so I'm going to sell this because I think it'll make me a lot of money. A lot of times I don't start a business because I think it can make me money. I start a business because there's a need there. And, you know, my belief is that, you know, you'll make as much money as the need is big. So there's obviously all these people in, you know, who want to get into e-commerce or who are already in it that are struggling, that they've clearly voiced that, hey, we don't have what we want in terms of learning this. And that's why, you know, if your inbox blows up, you know, with just a blog post like that, there's clearly a need there. So, you know, I think a lot of people launch things like, you know, you'll see people launching products all the time, and they spend all their time marketing a product, and they don't even know if people really want it. They're launching it for the wrong reasons. They're launching it because they want to make money. And if you launch things just if and when people need them, you know, people tend to be a lot more successful that way.
So for someone starting out, then we'll just use like your the heater example. Are you saying they shouldn't use that? They shouldn't set up a site to sell heaters. They should actually look around first and test ideas.
Well, and that's the tough thing, right? With e-commerce stores specifically, a lot of times it's, and specifically with dropship stuff, you're not going to really have. It's a lot tougher to have a very unique product if you're dropshipping, because essentially you're selling the same stuff that other people are also selling. So, you know, with if you're doing specifically dropship stores, a lot of times it's just, you know, can you market the product better? Can you offer it better? I mean, it's harder to get a huge edge if you're offering the same exact product as somebody else. So, you know, if you're doing a dropship e-commerce store, it's let me look at the competition, and, you know, is there something that, you know, if I was looking for a heater, what is it that's not currently being offered or being answered? So, for example, you know, we had a pretty successful heater site, and a lot of the competitors, it was just the same. Every site seemed the same, right? Just a boring picture of a heater, little bit of, you know, description on the product, not much else. One of our sites, we did a big comparison against every sort of heater. We made review videos for every single one. So if you were going to look for a heater and you were going to buy from someone, would you buy from one of the sites that every single heater and description was the same? Or would you buy from the site that, you know, it's us on video telling you all about the heater, and we have a chart like mapping out, hey, if you have a place that's 1,000 square feet or bigger, you're going to want to look at these brands. And we just made it really easy for people to find stuff, where, you know, the other sites you kind of had to, you were just guessing. And so there's obviously, it's not as big of an edge as you'd like, because you have the same product still, but there's still edges that you can make that, you know, where you can offer something of higher value than other people are doing, which is the whole goal. When people get into business, they should be aiming to offer a higher value than anybody else is offering.
But you're not passionate about heaters, right?
I'm going to say no. No, not at all. Right.
But you went ahead with an idea, or any other ideas that you have that you set up stores for. You're saying that you don't care that you don't have any passion for them, and you're not going to burn out at any point, even though you have no interest in it, but it's working because it's selling. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, the store model, like, I scaled up my stores really quick. I went from, you know, two stores the first week into about 20 within like 8 or 9 months. And that kind of goes against, you know, a lot of my business philosophy. It was more of a math play for me. Like, the math made a lot of sense. There was really low competition in a lot of niches. Because again, the e-commerce store space seems pretty untapped, and it still does. So it was just a math play. Like, I could spend X amount of money on, you know, marketing the sites to get them, you know, ranking for certain keywords. And then, you know, based on those rankings, I knew I could get X amount of sales. And so, you know, my calculation when I went into a niche was, you know, what's the rough traffic I think I can get in this niche? What's my estimated margins, estimated conversion rate, you know, multiply it all together, and I'd get a number. And, you know, I'd calculate out what I thought that would cost me to get to that point. So, you know, the way I scaled my e-commerce stores in general was not how I would normally go into a business. It's just that the gaps were so big there. If you guys have read some of my posts, I'm really mathematical with stuff. And there was just so much gaps in each of those niches. And I treated it more like a fund, like my e-commerce stores, more like a fund than like one specific business. So it was like, you know, either buying a store for very cheap, just knowing that it was a very good return, or starting up in a certain niche that was, you know, would be easy to get sales in.
So you diversified your business basically all within that same niche.
Yeah, and I didn't diversify for the point of diversifying. It was just that there were so many good opportunities that just kind of treated it like more like a fund. So I wasn't actively involved in the day-to-day. Basically, I hired someone from basically like the second month in business. I hired someone and didn't log into my stores after that. So basically outsourced everything. And so my focus was either finding a good deal, so buying a store that was selling for a low price or lower than it should have, or a store that could easily be improved and increase the value, or I would, you know, spend my time finding a good niche, and just then I would, you know, have my guys start a store, and they take care of all the product uploads and all that. So that business wasn't something, you know, that I was in a day-to-day basis. So I didn't necessarily have to stay passionate about, you know, working on within the stores. It was more of a broader scope, like my play with the stores.
And you said all your examples have kind of revolved around this drop shipping. Are there other options other than drop shipping? And have you ever, I guess, used those options? It sounds like you've never actually taken control of any physical products.
Right. And if I was to start over, I would probably create my own brand. So the reason being, the drop ship margins, the 20 to 30%. And like we talked about, you really don't have an edge on, in terms of offering a better product. You know, you can offer better services or, you know, more education on the product, but it's hard to get a lot of scale if you're selling the same thing as somebody else. However, if you create your own brand, you've got probably closer to 50, 60% margin, sometimes higher, and you can be the only one selling that product. So in other words, let's say you spend your time, and obviously it's the way it works is each step you go, right? If you have an affiliate store for Amazon, or if you have a dropship store, there's a greater barrier to entry, but there's a lot more profit on the, you know, if you go through the extra steps. And same thing with creating your own brand. There's going to be a higher, you know, money upfront that you'll have to spend and higher time to get into it. However, there's going to be a lot greater return, because if you create your own product and you have 50, 60% margins, now maybe you have 20 other people selling this for you. So it's essentially just like I would have started 20 of my own stores, except other people are starting them and selling this for me. As well as the fact that you have those high margins, you can also get involved in like running an AdWords campaign, where if you have a dropshipping store, you don't have the margins necessary usually to do PPC. So, you know, if you launch your own brand, a lot of times from day one, you can compete in the, you know, in pay-per-click, where you can't otherwise, because you're competing against manufacturers who are dealing with much higher margins than you.
Would you say you're building a brand? Are you building each site has their own brand, or are you trying to build Billy Murphy, the one-man Amazon type thing?
Yeah, I mean, each one's totally separate. So the way I did it, they were all in their separate individual stores. So it wasn't like, if you guys have heard of like Hay Needle and stores like that, they used to run all in separate stores. Now they have them kind of condensed into one kind of huge Amazon type store where you can get anything you need, furniture and, you know, clothes and anything like that. But yeah, they were all like very specific small niche sites.
What about, and we've had guests on, and Pat Flynn is a big advocate of this. They say build a platform first and then start selling sell people like products that you make. Are you saying you can actually do the reverse and just start selling stuff without having to build any type of platform?
Well, I mean, there's going to be a lot less followings. I mean, there can be, but for physical products, like if I was going to sell a heater, like Pat Flynn's platform, for example, is people who, you know, want to learn how to, you know, start a business or make money. The platforms for e-commerce stores are a lot different. Like, you know, if people want to buy heaters, they don't necessarily want to hear about a guy, you know, who talks about heaters. Like, I don't need to create like a heater brand to sell a heater. Would it help? Sure, but I wouldn't recommend, you know, someone spending a lot of time building a, you know, becoming the heater guy if they want to try out a heater store. It wouldn't make a lot of sense. Obviously, the more education you can have on an e-commerce store, the better, but it's a totally, totally different market than like kind of like the make money education type space.
So it sounds like what you're doing is more just kind of that front end work. You're doing the keyword research, you're doing the kind of all that research on the front end. And then what that finished product is no different than someone creating an AdWords, like an AdSense site or some other kind of affiliate site. As far as your role in it, it's not much different than any of those. Am I kind of reading that right? Your end product is just different.
Yeah, exactly. So you wouldn't necessarily have to, you know, spend a ton of time on a launch period. It would be, you know, if you created your own brand from day one, it takes more time. But if you created a dropshipping site, I mean, you could be literally up and running within the week.
So let's focus on this building a brand more, because I think that can apply to a lot of different things. Where do you start when you decide, okay, I'm going to build this brand? Say you already picked out whatever you're going to sell. Kind of take us from start to finish of building this brand, whatever, you know, from naming to URL and all that. How do you pick out all these things for this brand to make it unique, I guess?
So if you were going to actually create your own product, like source your own product and not get it from another supplier?
Yeah, exactly. So like we've talked about drop shipping quite a bit. Yeah, so let's kind of talk about if you're going to do something completely different and build your own brand around your own product.
Sure. So I haven't done this personally yet. I'm looking at potentially doing this as like a case study for Ecom Lab, so I can show people how to do it from step one. So keep in mind, this is how I would do it without me having done it yet. basically, you know, my plan would be, you know, right now I'm looking at, I've been looking at some stuff on like Alibaba, for example. It's like a Chinese place you can source from Chinese manufacturers. And so, you know, they could tweak a certain product, or they could design a certain product whatever way you want it. They could put your logo on it. So essentially they can help create your own brand. And obviously the prices there are a lot cheaper. So, you know, the stuff I'm looking at doing now are, you know, finding products that have a relatively high retail price. And I can get over there for pretty cheap, and you know, it's something that has a high enough search volume where it's going to be worth my time. Because obviously, if there's something that, you know, has a decent margin, but there's not enough people searching for it, or there's just not enough demand, you don't want to spend a lot of time, you know, building your own brand, and it's, you know, and it's $1,000 a month business. So, you know, if I was to create my own brand, I'd want to, you know, pick something that could potentially make a lot of money. I mean, for me personally, it's just based on, you know, how many people are searching for this. What are the competitors currently selling it for? You know, what can I get it for over there? Do I think I can make a better product than they're currently offering? I'm also looking at things like, you know, how are they marketing it in terms of, you know, on eBay, on Amazon. And the beautiful thing is, and this is awesome, I mean, I don't think people understand how easy it is to see, you know, what your competitors are doing. You can actually go to, you know, I've been going to eBay this week, for example, and searching completed listings of the exact products that I'm looking to sell, and I can see how many of them are selling. So, you know, maybe there's like 100 of a certain product that's selling, and I know, hey, I can get it made from these guys for, you know, 20% or 25% of what it's selling for. And so, you know, if I can make it, maybe I make it look a little better, maybe I create a better brand. You know, my buddy who does, who got me into e-commerce, he creates his own brands, and a big thing that he does, and he sells a lot of stuff that's very, very similar to his competitors, but he has way better branding. So in other words, he takes very professional photos, takes videos of the product, you know, shows you how to use the product, you know, has a really cool logo, like puts it on the products. And so his competitors just have like a cheap image of, you know, what their product looks like. So if you're going to buy from one of them and you're buying a very similar product, they're all buying from him, and he quickly became, you know, the biggest person in his space just by branding it way better than they were. So that's the type of stuff that I'm looking to do, and just currently in the process of, you know, debating comparing between a couple different niches.
So he's physically taking possession of these and holding inventory for sales, or he's just getting samples of them for these pictures and reviews, and then somehow circumventing that on the final sale to the customers.
Nope, he's actually buying the inventory.
Okay, so I guess with those margins, there's a lot of additional cost to factor in something like that.
Well, there's more cost. So, for example, you would front money to China, for example, to buy the product. So instead of, you know, drop shipping is essentially zero up front, right? So you get an order for $200. You send 150 of it to the supplier, and you get to keep the 50 for the customer order, but you never had to put any money up for it. So the difference is, yeah, if I want to create my own brand, it's going to take more money. However, there's a lot higher upside. So, you know, maybe I'll place a $10,000 order to China. And obviously you don't have to place an order that high. I mean, you could get some samples and you could start up slow. But, you know, let's say I place a $10,000 order and, you know, it works, but I'm selling the whole time at 60% margins instead of, you know, 25 or whatever it may be. And there's ways you can mitigate your risk too. So for example, I'll give you a good example of what I'm planning on doing, because one of the niches I'm looking at, it's a one product, but there's a ton of different types of this product. So, you know, and there's a minimum order quantity in China. So I don't want to order, you know, hundreds of these different products and then, you know, dozens of each individual product. I mean, I'd be spending, you know, 50 grand. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to source from China. I'm going to put a sample in first, see the quality. I'm going to source from there and see, I'm going to pick what I think the most popular ones will be, put them on the site, but then I'm going to go to suppliers in the U.S. and just become a drop shipper for them. So I'll be able to offer all their products. And what will happen is, as I make sales on the drop shippers' products, I'll be able to see what's the most popular, right? So if I'm selling out a lot of the drop shippers' products, I know, okay, this specific one sells really well, so I'm going to go make a better version of it in China. And, you know, so that's a way to mitigate your risk where you don't have to output a lot of money. You can slowly, you know, buy one product over there, buy another one, as you know what's most popular.
And that's interesting. Now, you said you attribute a lot of your success in this space to having, what I think you called it, like a badass friend to give a call to anytime you had a question.
Yeah.
And that's kind of your motivation to creating Ecom Lab is... then Ecom Lab will become that badass friend for people to reach out to and figure out things. What lessons are you teaching in Ecom Lab about maybe past failures you've experienced that you can pass on to people and not, you know, so maybe they can avoid those specific failures?
Yeah, basically I'm trying to include everything, like all my case studies from my stores, the things I mess up on. I mean, one of the things specifically that if I would do it over again is just not having so many stores. I mean, the whole model, and again, like I treated it more like kind of this fund I was investing in, and just going into all these stores. But the thing is, if you have one store, if you have 20 stores, if I improve the conversion rates on one of my stores by 50%, so if I did that and I own one store, I would have increased my sales by 50%. If I did that and I own 20 stores, I would have increased my sales by 2.5%. I think it's 2.5%. Basically, you could make major changes, and it would be an unbelievable change to get a 50% conversion rate, and it would barely see a tick on your business if you had 20 of them. So the ability to focus, as well as the fact that if you can take over a certain niche, there's so much more money to be had at the top. And what I mean by that is if you're the fifth best person in a niche or the 10th best person in a niche, you really never figure out how much money there is until you're at the top, because the top guy gets substantially more sales than people even realize. You know, I don't know the best way to describe it, but there's a level in the middle, right, where everybody kind of makes, you know, decent sales, and then there's the one or two guys at the top where, you know, they're clearly the best brand, but, you know, the people in the 3, 4, 5 spot or whatever spots, and I'm not talking about organic ranking, I'm talking about like your brand, but they'll never realize how much money there is in the space because they just don't have a good enough product. But, you know, my friend found out as soon as he became like the major brand, you know, based on the keyword searches that niche was getting, and he did a lot of the same math I did going in, there's substantially more money than he thought there was initially just because he has the best brand. So much more people than he ever thought possible are going to him for sales, where, you know, when he was... he actually runs a couple different websites in that space, and the ones, you know, a couple of them that he never really turned into a big brand. It's just they're getting a tiny fraction of what his major brand is getting.
For someone who's maybe has like a bunch of niche sites and they have a lot of ClickBank products and they build all those type of sites, are you saying that this is a more lucrative way to do it rather than relying on ClickBank? And I mean, you may have to work a little harder, but the monetary compensation's a lot higher.
Well, I mean, my whole philosophy is for if you're selling somebody else's products, if you can make something better, then yes, you'll make substantially more money. It's going to be more work, but yeah, you're going to make more money. I mean, I think the things selling on ClickBank are a lot different than, you know, most e-commerce store products, but it's the same philosophies in that, you know, if someone was promoting a ClickBank product on how to, whatever it may be, how to, you know, make money or how to sell a, how to make a blog or whatever it is, if you can create your own product that's just as good or better, you're going to make substantially more money. And not only that, you have leverage, and the leverage is where you make most of the money anyways. Like my buddy who owns his own brand has dozens of people also selling his product. So it's essentially like, it's almost as if, you know, he has dozens of stores himself, because think about the margins, right? If he has 60% margins and now 20 other people are selling his stuff, well, now he's getting the 30% that he would have got as a dropshipper on those just because he owns the product. So they're getting their cut and he's getting his cut, even though he doesn't have to do any work on their stores.
So is it kind of like building a pyramid type scheme?
How do you mean?
Well, like in a pyramid scheme, like there's the main product and then one person sells it and then they get other people to sell it, but they get a cut of it. And then it just like goes from there. Is he kind of doing something like that?
Oh, no, and it's nothing like that. Like a MLM.
Yeah.
No. So it's basically, it's just the way the math works. So if I said, let's take your podcast, for example. So if you guys made X amount per show in sponsorships, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wanted to sell your show. I said, hey, let me white label your show, right? Like, I don't want to create my own podcast. Let me white label yours and I'll market it for you. And you guys gave me a cut for marketing it. Basically, you guys would make money that you wouldn't have made if you didn't own it, right? So if you guys were renting your podcast, you couldn't sell it to me. But because you guys own it, then I can market it for you and make a cut, and you guys make extra money because I'm out there marketing it for you. So essentially all the stuff that's sold on ClickBank, somebody made that. And so all the people who are marketers for that are just essentially just doing a lot of their work for them. So when you own the product, then you're getting that leverage. So instead of you know, doing all the work for someone else's ClickBank product or, you know, e-commerce store product or wherever it is, if you turn the tables and you're the one who owns that product, now you have, you know, 20 of you or 100 of you marketing that for you.
Yeah, I wasn't trying to like attack or anything. I was just curious because it sounded somewhat similar, but I understand what you mean. Now, you had started Blue Fire Poker, which was a membership site, and Ecom Lab's going to be a membership site. Are you saying that maybe membership site is a big like lucrative business that people should get into as well?
Well, membership sites are good, but again, it goes back to the thing that I think a lot of people who start membership sites do it for the wrong reason. A lot of people think membership sites are a good way to make money, and they are, but your product has to be really good. And so, you know, I've seen people, a lot of the affiliate type launch membership sites are just, if you guys look at if you see a traffic graph, a lot of them spike really high and then they drop off and they die. And the reason is because the product, like the value is never there. They do a big marketing launch around them and make a little bit of money and then they, you know, kind of start another one. The way for a membership site to do really well is create something that can last a long time, if not, you know, forever. And I think that a lot of people focus more on the marketing of whatever they're going to launch than on the content. The content's what's going to make it successful long term. So, I mean, membership sites by themselves are a great, great model, but the value has to be there. So, I mean, with a membership site, if you can solve needs for people on a consistent basis, you know, maybe it's something that's great for a membership site. I mean, and it doesn't have to be, you know, digital products either. I mean, if you look at what like Dollar Shave Club is doing, you know, and that's a, you know, that's a membership type of business, and it's perfect because, and if you look at their products, this is a totally different example what those guys are doing, but they essentially took a product that, I mean, they're getting high margins on that product, and essentially they just created a brand about something that nobody had ever branded. So Now, when you think of, you know, shaving, I mean, a lot of people are thinking of them, right? You never thought of like a big, cool brand for, you know, for shaving before. And they just launched another brand off of that. And if you guys saw the, I forget the name of it, but it's like something for girls, like Get Flow or something. I don't know the name of it, but they just launched that for girls once a month. And it's just like this big viral video. And it's the same thing. It's like they created a brand about something that no one was doing. So, you know, I think membership sites can be really, really, really profitable if you pick something that, hey, people obviously need that stuff on a monthly basis. So if you can offer it in a way that's better than other people are doing it, then yeah, they're great because you get sales every month. So you don't have to try and sell new people every month. You know you have a certain amount of sales coming in.
So let's talk about your new membership site then, which we've been talked about a little bit, which is Ecom Lab. Kind of let us know what it's offering the end user and also maybe some behind the scenes stuff about what's going on with it and some of the techniques you're using to help it grow.
Yeah, so I mean, right now we're kind of, you know, a lot of the videos we're putting out are everything from SEO videos on e-commerce stores to how to set up an AdWords campaign for your store to, you know, finding a niche to setting up your stores. You know, we're putting out at least three new videos every single week. And so, you know, because some people need different things, right? Some people don't know how to get traffic to their store, so we're putting out those videos. Some people, you know, just don't know how to get into niches that are profitable enough. So we're putting out a little bit of everything, and we'll probably come up with a bit more of a structure once we're, you know, once it's running a little longer. But, you know, right now, a big way that we're getting, you know, finding the ideas of what content produce, we're just asking our premium members, like, hey, what kind of content do you want to see? And then we're making those videos and putting them out for everybody to see. In terms of, you know, scaling it up and growing the business, a lot of it right now, we're not doing a heavy marketing push. We're basically just trying to make sure it's exactly what people want. And it helps them, you know, we obviously don't want to do a huge push if it's not exactly what people need yet. So basically just trying to make sure that, hey, this is working. People are getting all their questions answered. And, you know, like you mentioned, our goal is to make it so, you know, they don't have to have someone in e-commerce that they know. They can just, you know, go to Ecom Lab, look at whatever video they need help on, and just their problem is solved. That's our goal with it. And I think, you know, I think we'll do a big marketing push once we figure out, you know, once we get a lot of feedback from our current members, you know, what's working for them and you know, what's not. I mean, maybe there's certain videos that just people aren't interested in, but yeah, we're trying to cover any and everything in that you could want to know for an e-commerce store.
Yeah, I think it's pretty interesting because, like we talked about at the beginning of the show, a lot of people know all about, you know, there's all kinds of just niche websites and affiliate marketing websites. And this is a slight twist on it, but it seems like, you know, just based on Joe and my ignorance, that if anyone else is like the same way, this might be a field where there's, like you said a couple times, a bigger opportunity than some of these other fields that might be a little more flooded. So do you see that kind of continuing because of that, because there's not as much material teaching people how to do this? And is that maybe one of the reasons you decided to make this class?
Yeah, I feel like it's just there's not enough people talking about it. And they're slowly starting to come on and more people talking about it. But, I mean, literally, it's just one of those things that, like, I feel like I had never really heard about it until I heard about my friend doing it. And yet if you go to, you know, go to Wicked Fire, go to Warrior Forum, I mean, there's hundreds of posts that you can find on people, you know, pushing the latest, you know, whatever supplement or whatever, or like affiliate marketing product. And I mean, it seems so flooded. I mean, I don't know if it is or not. I'm not in that space, but there's a million people talking about it, yet there's not a million people talking about e-commerce stores. And there's so many people searching for all these products, like specific, you know, specific products that there's not a lot of people either offering to sell or marketing very well, just because, you know, they view it as this huge barrier to, like, oh, I got to get suppliers, and oh, I got to set up all these deals and set up my own store. And, you know, it's, you know, anything in business, it tends to work this way. You know, things that are just a little bit higher of a barrier to get into, there's just a lot more profit on the back end. And that's what I feel about e-commerce stores.
Yeah, and it seems like there's the customer base is so much wider, obviously, because you can sell any kind of physical product that they could go to the store and buy versus this, I guess, you know, the ClickBank type products, whereas you're kind of marketing to a very narrow group of people, no matter what that niche is. I mean, there's only so many people that are wanting to buy an ebook or something like that, whereas a physical product, everyone buys them. Most people buy them online now. And then, of course, like we talked about, you can there's all different, once you get into this e-commerce space, then there's the drop shipping, there's the, you know, holding your own inventory and selling it that way, where it sounds like, you know, you're kind of becoming your own drop shipper. Is that kind of what that building the brand idea is? You're becoming the drop shipper yourself almost?
Well, yeah. I mean, you essentially have a bunch of drop shippers working for you if you created your own brand. So it's just, yeah, it just creates even more leverage and more money for you on the back end. It's just, you know, another step to go through. It's a little harder, but it's, you know, potentially really, really profitable. I mean, if you look at, you know, pretend you have one store and you're making 25%, and then you have your own brand and you're at 50, but you've got 20 guys doing it for you. Essentially, you're getting 25% on all those stores. So potentially, you can just scale up so much quicker. You've got the paid search you can get from day one. So it's, you know, it leaves a lot of the, you know, the questions of how quick you're going to scale up. If you own the brand, because of the fact that you kind of control the leverage.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, this has been super valuable. And I think the ecomlab.com is going to be really successful because, like we were talking about, there's not a whole lot of things like it in the space. So I definitely look forward to what's coming from it. So why don't you let everyone know once again where to find you? Is Forever Jobless still the best way?
Yeah, foreverjobless.com is the easiest way to reach me. It's my personal blog. And yeah, I try to get some new posts up there, but yeah, either foreverjobless.com or in the Ecom Lab forums.
Okay, awesome. And are those forums open to the public or is that just for the members?
Yep, the forums are open to the public. They're free.
Very good. Well, we'll link to all that in the show notes. And Billy, we really appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on.
Awesome. Thanks a lot for having me.
Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Entrepreneur Showdown. Thank you so much for joining us. And we'd love it if you join us every Monday morning to hear the latest episode of the Entrepreneur Showdown podcast. Remember, the place to go to find the show notes of today's episode and a whole lot more is www.entrepreneurshowdown.com. And while you're there, leave us your email address to find out about upcoming guests, latest episode releases, and a whole lot more.